to smoke about this time of the day. And all this is keeping me to where I can't go do it. Now, I'm gonna go do it.
Well, hello, and welcome to another session of About This Time of Day, a Teen Mom podcast, where we are living in 2009 and would please like to stay there. My name is V, I am your host, and this is the show where we get a little high and we talk a little teen mom. Thank you so much for joining me. You know I love doing it as much as you like listening to it. In this session, we'll talk about episode 7 of Teen Mom OG, Baby Steps. The description reads, Amber wants to put an end to the fighting and move away from Gary. Farah can't stand living under her parents' roof anymore. Macy struggles to keep up in school when her son starts walking, and Caitlin and Tyler plan their futures. I'm interested to see how this will all play out so late in the season, especially Amber moving away from Gary, who is her sole provider of income. This session's companion is some Mimosa Live Rosin Batter. Ooh, I fucking love this, you guys. It is tasty. It is not harsh on my throat and my lungs, and if I take a big enough hit, I am chillin'. So, I'm excited to see how this episode's gonna go, because I'm gonna be feeling pretty fucking good, I think. Yeah, very happy with this. I'm not sure if I've endorsed a strain so hard since the Daddy Perp session, which I think was session 2, when we were still calling them episodes, you know what I mean? Anyway, let's get right on with it. The 7th episode of Teen Mom OG opens up with Amber. Oh boy. Amber is giving Gary a call right in the beginning of her scene because she has a job interview that day, but Leah's daycare is not open, so inevitably she needs Gary to come save the day. Normally, I don't like to start off so early with the audio clips, but I just want everybody to just hear how loving and caring Amber is on the phone. This is the first we hear of that conversation.
I wasn't even calling to get mad at you. I was actually calling you for a favor.
What's the favor?
Take your daughter.
God damn, this girl is bossy. Like, I knew it's been evident in the previous episodes, but really, you need a favor, and you approach it that way. Ultimately, Gary is unable to help her with the babysitting that night. He has class, and therefore cannot do anything or try to find any other potential option for Leah. So Amber is forced to take baby Leah with her on the interview. It goes about as well as it went when she took baby Leah to the career counselor's office. Thankfully, in this situation, there is no giant picnic table for Leah to be placed on, but instead, Amber tries to place her on the ground while she's conducting this professional interview, one which really, if you think about it, is kind of a big deal. She needs this job. She wasn't working, I don't think at all before this. I don't really remember a lot of this season, you guys, because I've been so fucking high the whole time. Amber arrives at the salon she's being interviewed at, along with baby Leah, and as they enter the room, she tries to place baby Leah on the floor so she can conduct the interview without too much other distraction. Unfortunately, baby Leah is crying anytime Amber isn't holding her, touching her, soothing her, hugging her, what have you. This poor baby girl does not want to be in this room. She wants mama to pay attention to her. Mama's talking to this stranger that she doesn't know. And it's just really no place for a small child. As the interviewer is asking Amber the basic interview questions, why do you want to work here? What is your idea of customer service? How are you at multitasking? Is a funny one that she asks in here, which I'll get to in just a second. Amber is trying to distract Leah and keep her quiet on the floor. She picks her up, sits her on her lap periodically just to get her to quiet down. And as soon as she quiets down, she puts her back on the floor, which, oh, I don't know, makes her scream again. I'm a little confused. I want to talk about the toys that Amber brought for Leah to help distract her. The camera pans back and forth from the two of them talking to Leah's activity on the ground, and we see Amber handing her cups and funnels, like from your kitchen. to play with. Where are the blocks? Where are the books? You know, like the cardboard books that babies chew on. You know, I know Leah loves to chew on things, so bring that along with you. Why did you bring... She has two funnels and at least two cups, like drinking cups for Leah to play with. What the fuck? Oh my God. This poor baby girl. What, does she have toys? Does she have toys? And yes, Amber is asked about her multitasking ability, and she says, yes, I multitask like a pro. I am a 10 out of 10 on the multitask scale. Look no further. You have found your multitasking queen. And as she's finishing her sentence, Leah starts screaming again. She leans down to give Leah another funnel and starts saying something about talking about all this and all, like, that's what she's saying. She's like, when you're talking about doing, and she's trailing off a little bit. She has one hand on Leah's back, and she looks back up at the interviewer and says, sorry, it's hard to concentrate when she's just so distracting. You are officially not the multitasking queen. The scene ends with the interviewer confirming with Amber that she's looking for immediate work and would like to start as soon as possible. Then we see Amber holding Leah as they're walking out of the salon, and Amber saying to Leah, I think that went okay, but we'll see tomorrow. Unfortunately, we don't get to find out the results of that interview in Amber's next scene. Instead, we get to see her have another knockdown dragout with Gary. The scene starts with Gary getting out of his car and heading up into their former shared apartment, which now Amber is solely living in with Leah. And Amber's voiceover says Gary is supposed to be spending time with Leah tonight and hopefully giving her a well-needed break. Now, I'm not saying she doesn't need a break. Everybody needs a break every once in a while. I'm concerned about the use of the term hopefully and whether or not this was discussed prior to him coming over. Just because Gary comes into the room, greets Amber and Leah happily as you can when you're stepping into Amber's world, Amber immediately asks Gary, hey, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to change her diaper. I need you to put her down. I need you to give her a bottle. Gary kind of ignores her at first and starts playing with Leah, saying, I just want to spend time with Leah. Which, if you remember, her voiceover said that's what he's here to do, and only to hopefully give her a break as well. Amber says, Gary, in order for me to talk to you, I need her with a bottle in her mouth or put up. Again, like she's an object or a dog or a pet.
In order to talk to you, I need her either to have a bottle in her mouth, or put up. Because I'm really stressed out.
Okay, I'll put her to bed. I'll put her to bed.
And tired, okay? I watch her by myself all the time. Gary, you're making it worse, seriously.
Honestly, I really doubt what Gary is doing is helpful here.
Get your feet off.
I'll put my feet on my couch.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't want shoes on the couch. I'm so sorry.
What is wrong with my shoes? Not dirty.
They're not dirty. It's raining outside.
I'm not trying to fight with you, Amber.
You obviously know that we need more time apart. You've said it to me yourself.
What did I say, Amber? I'm lonely. I do not enjoy being where I'm at.
I'm not going to tell you to calm your voice down
no.
Again.
She's yelling. I love you. She's fine. Don't listen to her.
No, she's yelling because you're loud.
I told you yesterday when you gave me the money to pay for the rent, which I didn't need in the first place.
I don't want to fight in front of her. Damn! Hey, all of it. As long as Gary's supporting me, we'll never stop fighting.
So, more than a few interesting things happening in this exchange. First of all, I really don't think Gary yelling along with Leah is going to help calm her down at all. I see what he's doing kind of as a dad or a goofy uncle, like, making fun of the baby, mocking the child. Ha 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 ha, hilarious. But it's not helping Leah calm down or get any quieter. Secondly, we see Amber here, I think very plainly, leading Gary on into, well, it's really clear, we still need time apart. Well, wait a minute, how much time apart do you need before you know you can't be together? Or, Amber, is it that you know when you decide you don't want to be with Gary anymore, he will stop paying your bills? Just something to think about. And finally, the last thing I find really interesting about this exchange is Amber's projecting Gary, quote unquote, needing to calm his voice down or essentially stop yelling. She refers more than once to Leah being loud because Gary's being loud. And then at the end there, you hear her straight up say, "Gary, I'm not going to ask you again. You need to calm down your voice." As if she's not the one screaming and yelling at him to do so. I'm not saying Gary sounds like the calmest guy in the world, but if you're comparing the two, the one freaking out is Amber. Gary is just trying to get his point across and to get Amber to listen to him. And then, as you heard, once Amber is backed into a corner, she storms off. And the conversation is over. And as you heard, her voiceover closes out the segment by telling all the viewers that as long as Gary is supporting her financially, they're always going to fight. I believe there are steps, Amber, that you can take that would help your exchanges not end in arguments quite so often. When we next see Amber, she is on the phone with a realtor or somebody like that, trying to set up appointments to go see apartments and houses the next day because she has decided she is getting the fuck out of this one. Seems rash, but I understand. After she hangs up the phone with the realtor, her voiceover lets the viewer know that she also invited her cousin over, Crystal, to kind of give her advice on her current situation and just go over what's been going on with her. Crystal is a figure in Amber's life that we will see forever. We saw her in her 16 and pregnant, and I saw her up until I stopped watching the show. So that goes to show you just how connected she is with Amber. Amber greets Crystal at the door, and then they go sit down on the couch with baby Leah and just kind of start chatting.
How have you and Gary been? Not good whatsoever. You guys just both have to realize, like, two strong-minded people that butt heads.
He's not strong-minded, though. Like, you're strong-minded. He's just a
So are you guys going to stay? Are you going to stay apart? Are you going to move out?
I'm moving out. Yeah, I'm not going to. Yeah.
Do you think you could be a single mom without Gary in the picture?
Yo, I'm telling you, like, you know, I can do this. I tell myself that. The thing is, like, I had her at such a young age. Like, yeah, that's my fault. Yes, Dada. I just could have waited a couple years for little Leah, you know? Same person, same everything. Just a couple more years.
Can you afford your own apartment?
The thing is, I'm going to have to be going off to government as I'm in school and being a single mom. I had an interview at a salon, but I haven't heard anything yet.
They
gotta take baby steps, you know? But I just want her to have a real good life.
I don't want to rely on government assistance, but until I get a job, it's the only way I can get Leah away from all the fighting.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe, like, you could stop fighting so much with Gary. Trust me, I know it takes two to tango, but it only takes one to walk away. And let's face it, Amber never walks away from one of those arguments. Anyway, as you heard, we had Crystal there asking some rather poignant questions, and whether they're prompted from producers or not, there are questions that need to be asked, and ones that I've been asking you guys. Does she really think that she can be a single mom without Gary's help? Good question. And then the even better question of, do you think you can afford an apartment on your own? And I gotta say, what the hell is with the sad, sappy music that comes on when Amber says that she has to go on government assistance? I understand that we looked at welfare maybe a little differently in 2009 than we do almost post-COVID in 2021, but I never will understand people looking down on others who use government assistance. That's what it's there for, to assist you. If this is what Amber really thinks she has to do, then let her do it. My comment about her just fighting less with Gary still stands, though. If she took that money she's using for an apartment and put it towards therapy, now then, I think we might have a solution. In Amber's next scene, she is making good on her plans to go look at some apartments. Baby Leah is not with her. I wonder where she is. Amber and a realtor look around at a few different places, and Amber actually finds a pretty nice, recently remodeled and painted apartment with new appliances for $425 a month. This fucking bitch has some nerve to be looking for an apartment when it was affordable for someone to find a fucking apartment. But seriously, it's a really good find and she should be happy to find it. It's pretty much decided that that's the apartment she's going to get. Amber goes back to Gary's house where we learn Leah has been and wants to tell him her news. She hopes he doesn't freak out.
It's time to tell Gary about my plans to get my own place. I hope he doesn't freak out.
I went and looked at some apartments today and this one apartment was really nice. For $425 a month.
All right, so you are looking to find a place to stay now, for sure?
Yeah.
No, I'm getting pissed off, Amber.
Why are you pissed?
Well, I still want to know that you're wanting me. You still want to...
I love you.
Let's beat around the bush.
It's really about if we're just the right people to be together. We're completely different.
I know.
You don't know.
You just said we're two different people.
It's like feeling, you know?
Okay, well, if you say we're two different people...
When we kiss, what do you feel?
I feel your lips on my lips.
When I kiss somebody, I want it to be more than that.
Well, then you better start kissing somebody else because I guess you're not going to feel it from me.
I don't know how I'll make it on my own. But right now, I can't be with Gary.
So in my opinion, this 100% confirms my suspicion in the last segment that Amber is leading him on purposely so she can use whatever she needs him for, in my opinion, once again. Feel free to write in, correct me if I'm wrong. The way Gary reacts here, the way he says, I want to know that you're still wanting me, so you are looking for a place now, just the way it's presented back to Amber makes me feel like he's been jerked around. This is the reaction of someone who's been told yes, who's been told no, who's been told yes, who's been told no, and now they're being told no. I'm moving out. This is over. I love you, but that's not fair for Gary. He is a fuck up. I'll always say that, but it's still not fair to toy with someone's emotions in that way. Also, my friends, if you are kissing somebody and you just feel their lips on your lips and that's all you feel, if that's all you're in it for, fine. But if you're actually in a relationship, girl, don't sell yourself short. I put up with that for a long time. 0 out of 10 would not recommend. Amber's next scene starts off with her signing the lease and getting the keys to her first apartment. Her voiceover says that she still hasn't heard back from the salon job, but between savings and government assistance, she can afford a down payment on an apartment, or whatever, you know, first and last. I'm jealous and mad, though no matter how I feel about it, you've got to know Gary is about to feel 100 times worse. The scene quickly transitions from her receiving those keys to the apartment to her back at the other apartment packing up her things. Gary walks through the door, pretty much unannounced, and just says, sweet. Amber turns around and says, what? Why would you say sweet? And he says, because you're packing your shit, and walks away into the other room. Oh, good. So this is how this is starting. Amber's reaction to him walking into the other room and closing the door, I'm not sure what room this is. Bathroom, maybe? She picks up some kind of package and lobs it at the bathroom door. That's an incredible first response. Yeah, he walked in there being a complete asshole. But when your knee-jerk reaction is to pick up something and lob it at the door that the dude just walked through, and your child is 5 feet away from you in her playpen, I have to question your judgment. Gary opens the door up and picks up the package that Amber threw at the door. He walks over to baby Leah and passive-aggressively, but perhaps truthfully, picks her up and says, I'm going to change you because you're leaking through your diaper. Is that the third fucking time we've caught on camera this child literally leaking through her diaper? Okay, I'm not the kind of person to petition that anybody call CPS or involve the government in most things, as I don't trust the government very much. But MTV Cruise did nothing? Did they remind Amber to maybe, like, change her baby? No, it's not their responsibility, but if they're witnessing neglect from a parent, what is your responsibility as a documentary crew? As a reality TV show crew? God, just the comparison from what the show is today to what it was when it started. I don't think this would ever fly in 2021. Amber completely ignores Gary's statement and decides to question him on his greeting to her instead.
Why would you walk in and say sweet?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have an apartment. I've already paid 2 months on it. Plus, I've already put it in my name of utilities.
Okay.
And you know, if you see me quite surprised.
I'm not surprised. I don't want to talk about it no more. It's over with. You got your go.
Great, Gary. I want this relationship between us to be a good one, Gary.
Okay. It's not going to be. I'm a very resentful person. I've taken so much crap from you, and it's up here.
I love you no matter what, Gary. I'm going to say
that
right
now. That's fine.
I am simply saying for Leah's sake, I'm not...
For Leah's sake, I will come pick her up. I won't say words to you. You just tell me how she is.
She needs to see her father and mother...
She will see me.
...being okay and happy and not being mad all the time and yelling.
I'm just letting you know.
Look at me. Gary.
What's the point of seeing us getting along? What's the point?
You don't understand, Gary, because when you see them not getting along, it hurts you even worse. I know from experience and you know that.
Why would I want to get along with you right at this point in time? I don't want to be around you.
You do it for your daughter.
I don't want to look at you. I don't want to even remember what we had together.
Gary walks out not long after the last word is said, and Amber is left crying on the couch. This is another tough conversation in this episode. I don't believe that Amber bringing up how she wants her and Gary to get along is authentic. I think she's bringing that up in this moment because she knows Gary's upset. She knows she's probably said some things to Gary that weren't exactly true about her trying to find a place. And now, in order to shift the attention from her, we need to focus on us getting along, and right now, because you're blatantly saying we're not going to have a good relationship, Gary, you're the reason we're not getting along. That's just my interpretation. It's just a shame baby Leah is once again in the middle of it all. You can barely even hear her this time because she's just so used to it, and this is probably one of the calmer arguments they've had given the previous one we just heard in the same episode. That poor child. I am so thankful for Christina. Ah, and what a perfect segue.
It's a Christina fact.
This session's Christina fact is Christina is still alive.
It's a Christina fact.
In Amber's next scene, she is all ready to move to the apartment that Gary was paying for, to the apartment that the government will eventually be paying for. She drops baby Leah off at her daycare, and Gary's family actually pitches in to help her move her stuff. They're probably just like, yes, get the fuck out, get away from us. Gary himself is not there. It's just his family. As they're wrapping up moving everything, Gary's mom gives Amber a hug and says maybe this is the right decision. Maybe he'll come around before it's too late. For a mother to say that, it's pretty shocking if you ask me. Maybe she's just desperate to keep in touch with Leah? I don't know, but that was a weird comment. Amber heads back to the daycare, picks up baby Leah, and brings her back to show her her new home. She seems happy. Nothing's really filled in yet, just her bed and her crib. No toys out, no decorations yet, but it's theirs and they're happy for it. The scene cuts to commercial and comes back to Amber, I think very shortly after they move in because, well, the apartment's still relatively clean. Her voiceover says that she still wants Gary and Leah to have contact, obviously, so Gary's coming over to see Leah and her new apartment. It's a pretty easygoing visit. Gary spends time with Leah, obviously playing with her a little bit, and then Gary and Amber try to talk for a few minutes. Gary really doesn't seem like he wants to be there. Amber talks to him and says a lot of things that we've heard this episode already, like, I don't want Leah to be around us when we're fighting. I don't want us to be angry at each other all the time. We should be civil. And I really think this is the best way to go about it. Gary is very disengaged. He's looking down, not making eye contact. Amber tries to make Gary feel a little better by saying, Gary, I still love you. Which may be manipulative, may not be manipulative. I don't see a motive in this exact scenario for it to be manipulative. But regardless, Gary doesn't really want to hear it. He continues looking down. He says, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Let's not talk about it. And you can tell he's starting to cry. He's starting to kind of break up. It's very sad, and it speaks very highly to how Gary feels about Amber and about baby Leah and the situation that he finds himself in. Amber tries to ask Gary what's wrong when she realizes he's about to cry, but he just responds, nothing, Amber. Again, a very immature response. Not long after that final exchange, Gary gets up and starts to say goodbye to Leah and starts to head out. Everything is fine. They're not screaming at each other. Yes, Gary is upset, but they're not angry. He gives Leah a big hug, tells her multiple times that he loves her, and walks away, closes the door. That's tough. That's gotta be tough. The first post-separation visit with your child. Before the episode ends, we get one last, very short Amber scene in which she finally receives a call back from the salon and, in fact, gets the job. I guess that's good news. Now we know that she can keep the house and pay some bills and buy more drugs. Next, we meet up with lovely Miss Macy. We see Macy and Ryan helping Bentley learn how to take his first steps. Macy says he's pretty much walking on his own at this point, and he's about to be a handful. It's so cute to see her and Ryan kind of doing the mom and dad thing. It happens so rarely, and especially to have them getting along at the same time as the parenting is happening. Oh, a golden moment. But it only lasts a few seconds because the scene transitions into Macy at home at her parents' house with baby Bentley, who is now walking and walking a mile a minute. He is going, gone for sure, just like little Leah. Macy is shown trying to take a test online for school, and she tells Bentley, I have 10 minutes to take this test, Bentley. But Bentley doesn't know or care what that means, so he's just wandering all around the house. He's playing with the dog. Thankfully, he's not pulling anything down from the kitchen table or anything like that. The bulk of this first scene is mostly Macy trying to balance taking this test with keeping an eye on Bentley, until finally she just says, yeah, you know what, I'm not getting any school done today. She closes her laptop, and then we see her and Bentley cuddling on the couch, and she says, okay, you know what, we're gonna go look at daycares today. It seems to be the last straw for the moms a lot of the time, where they can't get their schoolwork done, so now they have to consider daycare, which I think that's a fair line to draw. You're doing this to make your life better going forward for your whole family, including Bentley or including Leah or including Sophia. So the trade-off, it's worth it. In Macy's next scene, she tells us that since all of her other friends moved away to go to college, she's made some new friends at the community college where she is now attending. She's over one of those friends' houses at this time with a few other people from her community college, and little Bentley is running around playing with all the girls, and everybody's just having a good time. Macy is talking about her classes and how many she's doing versus how much she's actually getting done, and that's exactly why she's looking into a daycare for Bentley. Her friends ask her, why does Bentley need a daycare? Can't Ryan watch him? And I feel like maybe they even asked that as a joke, because after whoever says that, all the other girls in the room are kind of like chuckling, and Macy straight up says, I just don't want that. I would rather he go to daycare. Oh my gosh, what another powerful statement. Macy loves baby Bentley, but she'd rather have him at daycare than his dad's. Wow. As Macy is chilling with her friends and actually getting her hair done by one of them, kind of cute, Ryan gives her a call.
Hello. What are you on there? I'm at Ashton's. Talking about school.
get my hair straightened because I'm too lazy to do it, and then we're going to check out a daycare for Bentley.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
You tired of playing with him all day?
Well, you know, I have to go to school and play with Bentley all day, so, I mean, gonna have to do something.
Careful.
All right, I'll call you in a little bit. Bye. Yeah. Why do you need daycare? Are you sick of playing with Bentley all day?
Yeah.
Do you want me to slit your throat? Because I will.
Wow, we just took it up several notches, wouldn't you agree? Though I can't really blame her, that was a really shitty and completely ignorant thing for Ryan to say, and probably the last thing Macy wants to hear. Also, if you're so concerned about him going to a daycare, Ryan, why don't you try to offer to put a plan in place to watch Bentley with your parents? Why don't you take that initiative so maybe Macy won't feel so weird or uncomfortable leaving Bentley with you? That is, to me, the biggest problem here. When we next see Macy, she and all of her friends are heading out to check out daycares for Bentley. And of course, baby Bentley is in tow. You should just assume that Bentley is with Macy unless I tell you he's not. They head on inside and it looks like a really nice establishment. There are multiple rooms, it's bright, it's in a middle of a plaza, so it seems more secure than maybe the daycare that Amber went to in the last episode. But no judgment, to each their own, because daycare is fucking expensive as shit. And Macy learns that firsthand when they're consulting in the office after the little tour, and Macy looks at the contract and asks, "This price is per month?" The director corrects her and says, "No, that's per week." Jesus Christ. Later in the parking lot, Macy says it's more than her rent. Moms, more power to you guys. I couldn't do it. That's my weed bill. I know, it's probably less than that. My weed bill's probably less than that. But I'm just saying, I have other expenses. Frivolous things I need to buy. I can't be spending crazy amounts on daycare, childcare. But because of Macy's current situation with school, it's still probably the best bet. It sounds like she's pretty much decided on this daycare. Her friends ask her, "Do you think you'll get a little bit of your life back now that you'll have time to yourself?" And Macy says it'll be easier, but hopefully she means just to get her schoolwork done. That's what I think so anyway. In Macy's next scene, we get to witness a conversation that never left my mind, I think, from the first time I've ever seen it. I'm going to let the audio play because truly this entire scene is pretty much this conversation. And I might interject. I'm not sure how I want to play this yet. We'll just see how I feel as I'm listening back to the audio because, dude, just fuck Ryan.
"I'm not happy I'm going to have to drop my online classes, but I've fallen so far behind because I'm always taking care of Bentley."
"What are you doing today?"
"Gotta go to Chat State."
"Oh, what for?"
"To be a dropout."
"You dropping all your classes because you're lazy as f***?"
What an absolute skeeze. You have got to be joking. Who says that to their girlfriend or baby mama ever? Who says anything like that to anybody? How is Macy not like freaking the fuck out right now?
"Watch your mouth."
"I mean, that's why you're doing it though."
"Because I'm lazy?"
"Yeah, because you didn't like try."
"I did try." "Are you here to make me feel like or are you here to like help me?"
"I'm just telling you."
"Because I don't think you're very good at being nice."
"I'm just saying."
Once again, enlighten me, Ryan. What is it that you are just saying? That Macy doesn't try? That she doesn't put forth any effort into important things in her life? Where have I seen that before? Because you know, Ryan, if you would have just lifted a finger, she would have had such an easier time trying to deal with Bentley and college and getting good grades than she actually did because you were off doing fuck knows what. Seriously, I can't stand this dude. And also props to Macy for being so kind with the, "I don't think you're very good at being nice." That's probably the most polite way to say something like that.
"So you can go back next semester?"
"Yeah."
"I don't think you'll get through college."
"You don't think I'll get through college?"
"Mm-mm."
"Why?"
"I don't know."
What a thing to say to somebody and then to only end up having absolutely zero reason to be saying that.
Well, I'll see how much you think of me.
Then if I was nice about it, you'd think you could just get away with not doing it.
No.
Yeah? That's how you do everything. Yes, you do.
Oh, sorry. I had no idea this entire time everything Macy did was because Ryan was mean to her about it. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Are you trying to argue?
No,
I'm just saying. I think you are. That's how I do everything. How? Everything. Are you saying I don't do anything?
No.
Well, that's what it sounds like.
You just don't ever take it very seriously, so.
I would if I didn't have a baby.
I wouldn't need to drop my classes if I got more support from Ryan.
Okay, I'm really glad they added that in at the end there with her voiceover, how she wouldn't have to drop these online classes if she just got more support from Ryan. Because when Macy says that, well, she would take it more seriously if she didn't have a baby, what she means is, Ryan, I could take it more seriously if you would fucking help. I feel pretty safe in saying right now, we're seeing Macy really trying to communicate. She's really trying to be the bigger person, stay calm in the face of some serious what the fuck, and try to still talk things out while actively being attacked. Can we give her that point? I'm giving her that point. Thankfully, we transition away from that fucking asshole to a very touching scene in Macy's next scene of her dropping Bentley off at daycare for the first time. And I have to say, this just comes off so much more authentically than Amber's. If you didn't hear my breakdown of Amber dropping Leah off at daycare, go back and listen, and then compare it to this scene. It's just, in my opinion, miles apart. We see Macy and baby Bentley pull into the parking lot and walk up to the door. As they're walking, Macy is already telling baby Bentley how nervous she is and how she is going to miss him. They walk in. Macy sets him down in the room, gives him a big hug, and says, "Call me if you need anything," which is funny because he's 2. 1, who cares? And Bentley runs right off and starts playing. Just like we saw Leah having a good time with the little kids and all the other toys, Bentley is swimming like a little fish. He is in there and having a good time. Macy is visibly shaken by this. She's not crying or anything, not up in arms. Well, not figuratively. Her arms are up on her head as she's watching Bentley move on without her. And that's gotta be such, like, a sad experience as a mom. And I'm glad that we can see it, because this is not what we saw with Amber. This is a mom who's like, oh my god, he doesn't need me. He's gonna be taken care of here. I think that is just such a weird transition to make in a mother's mind. But watching this, and as empathetic as I am, if what I'm feeling is even a quarter of it, it's gotta be crazy. It's just gotta be a crazy feeling. The daycare worker gently asks Macy if she's ready to head out, and with her hand still on her head, Macy says, yeah, I guess. She tries to go back and give Bentley one more hug, but Bentley's not fucking having it. Little dude runs away from her and, like, gives her one of the, ah, mom, stop it, ah, like my cat does to me. Can't get away from me. That's how he meows. He's very crotchety. But, poor Macy. She's probably just beside herself. I can only imagine. She heads out to the car and actually ends up giving Ryan a call.
Hello?
Bentley just got dropped off at daycare.
Did he cry when you left?
No, he wanted to leave. He didn't even want to give me a hug. He was too busy playing with the toys.
You sad?
Yeah. I think I'm gonna cry.
Why?
Cause he's at daycare.
Well, yeah.
I'm sitting in the parking lot.
But you can't leave?
No. I'm making you drop him off from now on.
I didn't think leaving Bentley at daycare would be this hard.
It's truly a sad state of affairs when vague interest and concern is pretty much the most compassion you're ever going to get from a person. When we next see Macy, she is heading off to Chattanooga State to drop her classes. Womp womp. Oh, well. It's okay. I mean, I fucking hated college. I only gritted through it because I was promised a car at the end. Thanks, Mom and Dad. I'm an only child. Macy drops all her classes, signs the form, and walks out. She's disappointed, but obviously, since she was failing all her classes anyway, this is probably just the best way to go. The counselor does warn her before she signs the paper that she has seen students take a year off, a semester off, that turns into 10 years. I said this before when Farah was going to talk to college people. I don't know why the fuck they need to lecture you on your shit. Are you not paying them? Okay, so I'm dropping these classes. Fuck all. I've already made this decision. So you telling me to come back next year or not, or 10 years, bullshit, I don't care. Fuck you. You have my money. Shut up. Macy heads back to Ryan's, where she, Ryan, and baby Bentley are all hanging out in Ryan's room, chatting on the bed about Macy dropping her classes. Ryan starts off pretty neutral. He actually says that he thinks school is overrated at a certain point, which I'm not surprised to hear at all, but I think is very telling. School is overrated. Macy does come right back and say school is not overrated. But I feel like someone who says something like that is feeling maybe insecure about their inability to conquer whatever they're talking about or to partake in whatever they're talking about. It's pretty clear Ryan did not go to college. I think he and Macy met in high school, or at least maybe a motocross thing. Either way, no, schooling's not that important to Ryan. What I'm thinking now is that he's obviously just intimidated by Macy even trying to get a degree, so he needs to, at every turn, kind of push her down a peg. Like, hey, you're really not that much better than me. You know, you don't even try. You're making too many excuses. Their conversation ends with Ryan asking, well, are you really going to go back? And she says, yeah, I'm going to try, and I'm going to need your help. This is where he mentions the excuses, not trying hard enough, etc. Macy tries to tell him, I'm doing the most that I can. And as she's saying this, baby Bentley walks over to her and starts banging on her chest and on her shoulder, just kind of roughhousing and playing with her. Macy says to Ryan, you see, this is what happens when I'm trying to study. Can't you understand that it's hard? And for whatever reason, the producers cut there and Ryan doesn't answer that question. I don't know. I think he is intimidated, and I think he wants Macy to fail. That's why we're hearing this rhetoric. That's why we're hearing this kind of attitude from Ryan. Next, we meet up with Farah. Farah's first scene has her voiceover telling the viewer that she's been taking really good care of Sophia lately and not going out quite as much as she used to, as we saw in the last episode. Great, good. But now, and I thought it was going to be worse than it is, but it's really not that bad. Farah just wishes that her mom would allow Farah to be a mother, so to speak. The scene transitions from Farah putting Sophia down for bedtime to Farah downstairs talking to her mother. She tells Deb that she would really appreciate it if Deb does not come into Farah's room an hour before Farah wakes up to play with Sophia and wake Sophia up and take Sophia downstairs. I'm not sure why she asks her not to do this, maybe because it disrupts Farah's sleep. It is kind of doing Farah a favor. Deb tells her that she's not waking her up, that she's feeding her. Farah is kind of dismissive of that comment and just says, okay, well, just please don't come up into my room before I wake up. Farah goes upstairs, goes to sleep, and Deb's parting words to her are, okay, good night, love you, I won't bother you tomorrow morning, because she just had to throw that in there. And then the next thing we know, the viewer is told that it is now 5 a.m. the next morning. Baby Sophia is wide awake and ready to get at him. Unfortunately, Farah is not quite so. She is sleeping quite soundly in bed, even though we have Sophia seeming to make a lot of baby noises, a lot of cooing. She's not crying. She's not screaming. She's not in distress, but she's awake. Still, Farah doesn't wake up. And I'm watching this completely unsure how she cannot even be roused by the sound of her daughter's voice. Like, if you hear your child, you instinctively know that you need to get up, you need to be awake. When I hear my cat meow in the fucking hallway, I'm like, oh shit, I better get up. In a few moments, we see Deb come in, waving her hands, very happy, smiling at baby Sophia, but trying to stay quiet as to not wake up Farah, which is honestly pretty considerate, considering Deb. Deb quietly picks up Sophia and takes her downstairs and starts feeding her breakfast. I feel like this is an insult wrapped up in a favor, if that makes any sense. She's insulting Farah's ability to parent by just doing it for her. You know, she's not even going to be able to do this, so why even give her the chance? Of course, if the baby were in need, I think Farah would have gotten up and fed her. Obviously, the baby's hungry, she's crying, but Sophia was just kind of making noises, moving around. It wasn't anything that demanded immediate attention. Would it have hurt her to wait another hour to eat breakfast? I don't think so. I'm not a mom. That scene ends with Farah still sleeping in her bed. In Farah's next scene, we continue to see a little bit more fallout from that quote-unquote oversleeping. The scene begins with Farah getting ready in the mirror to start her day, and Farah's voiceover lamenting the fact that her mother bugs her all the time. Now, we have seen Farah more than once in this first season of Teen Mom be a complete bitch to her parents and her family, sometimes unnecessarily, and sometimes it's been warranted. And she doesn't act like a bitch in this scene, I'll say that off-rip, but I think it would be warranted. The viewer hears Deb calling from downstairs, "Farah, Farah," over and over and over again, and it's made to look as if Farah is just not responding. Eventually, Farah goes downstairs with baby Sophia, and as she walks by Deb, Deb tells her, "You know, you were cooking down here, and now I can't find anything." And Deb says it in this disarming baby voice, probably because Sophia is in the room. I doubt it would be coming off so sweetly if Sophia was not in the room. It's just such a passive-aggressive move. But Farah comes right back and says, "No, I only touched one thing in there." Deb eventually finds what she's looking for in the cupboard, and Farah starts feeding Sophia her breakfast. Maybe about 2 bites into Sophia's breakfast, Deb comes over and says, "Aren't you giving her any moisture with that?" Which is a weird way to put, "Aren't you giving her any water or drink with that?" That's strange. "Aren't you giving her any moisture with that? That stuff is thick." Then we see her fussing about the kitchen with a little baby medicine dispenser, you know, those tiny syringes. I'm not sure what they're using it for, but the point they're trying to get across here is that Deb's fussing about the baby needs water. Deb's fussing about, "Farah, you need to fill it up to 2.2. Ah, watching it gives me such anxiety because they're just... Maybe it's not actually happening that way, but that's how I'm perceiving it right now, because I know, as innocent as this exchange seems, you know that every phrase, every word spoken is so loaded. This isn't just about feeding Sophia. This isn't just about the syringe. This is about control and who has it. The scene continues into probably just a little bit later in the morning, where Farah is shown to be cleaning up her bedroom and Deb walks in with Sophia's clothes. This is where her quote unquote sleeping in the other day comes back to bite her once again.
"Okay, well, I have her clean clothes here. If you would get up a little earlier, you could clean clothes."
"Get the hell out of my way. They don't go over here.
What I gotta fold them. Move." "I think because I am a teen mom, you think I need more help than what I need when I don't."
"You need time management."
"I have pretty good time management for how old
dude,
I am."
"Dude, you're not good at time management."
Did Deb just say dude?
"That's ridiculous.
Every morning I come in here, that baby's got her head popped up looking around going... Dude, it has to get done in a timely manner."
Oh my god, she did. She's one of us, you guys.
"Yeah, it does. We my time, my manner.
We can't drag it out according to the world, according to Farah. It has to be done."
"Well, it is, because it's not Sophia about you. World,
it's about so. Baby. So all the times I come up here and there's god, dirty dishes care. And...
Yeah, I have to get to
food
things.
Wrappers. And in the middle of all of this is my poor baby Sophia.
All I have to say is there are way
messier poking her
people.
Head up. Around all of the banana peels and yogurt.
It is. No, I leave dirty dishes in there. I leave my dirty clothes in there. And I take care of my kid. Yeah. Okay.
I'm like not having this conversation because it's pissing me off.
You're just going to leave baby up here by yourself?
I don't like getting upset every day. So I'm not going to.
And it's actually those sentiments that end this scene, which feels like such a heartless place to end on. So Deb makes a good point. Dude, you have to keep this baby on a schedule. Yes. Okay, that is one thing I neglected when commenting earlier about if it really matters if Sophia is in her crib for an extra hour in the morning. Sometimes it does. I don't have a schedule so much as other people do, but I'm very scheduled and regimented in my own mind, so I don't think about how other people need schedules in their way as well. And babies certainly need their own schedules. But while Deb has a good point here about the scheduling or doing things in a timely manner, dude, we do have to consider what she's telling Farah. Deb is not allowing Farah, or Sophia for that matter, to have their own schedules. Farah says, somewhat in a facetious way, yeah, we'll do things on my time, on my schedule. But shouldn't it be that way? If Farah is in fact taking care of Sophia the way we've seen her take care of Sophia in the last couple episodes, why shouldn't she get to choose the schedule for her own child? She makes a point in the very beginning of the conversation, you know, Mom, I think you think I need more help because I'm a teen mom than I actually need. And I think it could be easily said that Farah thinks that she needs different help than she actually needs. And I feel like the truth is somewhere in the middle. Deb totally needs to back off with these little things, like how far apart on the syringe the 2.2 and 2.5 are. Farah could admit that perhaps she needs Sophia on a more regimented schedule. I can tell you as a viewer, I have not seen these things that Deb is referring to, the dirtiness, the garbage, the plates, the banana peels. So I'm not sure what exactly Deb is talking about. Maybe Farah cleans when they're filming. Maybe this is just something we don't see. Either way, Deb maintains control from the get-go of this scene, and Farah, in my opinion, is forced to back down and kind of give in. That's why you see the tears. That's why you see her walking away and leaving Sophia all by herself. Mom, if you want to be so fucking involved, why don't you just keep an eye on her while I go cry for 15 minutes and get my shit together? Farah's next scene opens with her looking on Craigslist for roommates because her mom is driving her crazy and she needs to move out. The viewer gets a quick glimpse back into 2010 with the closed-mindedness surrounding mental illness when Farah exclaims,
"Who in the hell would want to live with somebody who's bipolar? Not me."
Ooh, wow. Hot take from Farah. Just a blanket statement. We don't mind living with anybody with mental illness here at about this time of day because God knows we are riddled with mental illnesses here at about this time of day. Meaning just me, because I'm the only one that does this podcast. As Farah is going through her potential roommate options on Craigslist, Deborah comes home and she asks Farah what she's looking at on the computer.
Why are you going to look at apartments, baby?
Because I don't like living where I live.
Why?
Because you annoy me. Because you don't help me, you put more stress on me.
You don't think I help you? Feeding Sophia, bathing her, washing her clothes, changing her bed.
Yeah, well, I don't need her being around things that upset me. And I don't like being unhappy all the time. I don't like being bothered. I don't like it.
Oh, so you don't love me? Is that what that means?
I'm not even saying that. I'm saying I don't like living with you.
Well, I love you. I don't know why you have to feel that way.
I just told you why.
Well, I'm sorry.
So.
Alrighty. I'll see you later.
Okay. I hope living on my own is the right answer.
This is definitely one of the conversations that I remember watching as a teenager and being like, God, Farah is such a bitch. What an ungrateful brat. How can she talk to her mom that way? And now I see it in a bit of a different light. Farah starts the exchange very combatively already. Before the audio started that we just heard, Deborah asks her, "What are you looking at, baby?" And very quickly, Farah responds, "I don't know. What am I looking at?" Deb walks around to the computer on the other side, looks at the screen, and that's when the audio that we just heard started. Farah is already kind of ready to fight because she already knows that this decision is about to be squashed in one way or another. Either Deb is going to explain to her every single possibility that could ever go wrong about her moving out with Sophia alone, or, and it is the choice that we did see Deb go with, Farrah is about to be heavily guilted for any decision that she wants to make to free herself. Kind of similar to the car situation from her 16 and pregnant episode, except Deb knowing that perhaps the guilt is a little bit more effective. That is going to be her MO, and Farrah's ready for that. We see her respond with, "This is why I can't stay here. I'm annoyed by you. I'm bothered by you. And, you know, you don't actually help me. You stress me out." And that's the kind of statement that a 19, 18-year-old me watching this says, "Wow, what a fucking bitch." But as we just discussed in her previous segment, Deborah definitely helps her, just not in the ways that Farrah believes that she needs help. Farrah needs support, whereas Deb is giving her actual manual help and not a lot of emotional support. Farrah thinks at this point in time that she is better off emotionally supporting herself and believes that the rest may fall into place. I find it kind of interesting that Deb goes with the guilt effect here, because it's so wide open to just kind of burst her bubble with, well, how are you going to pay for this, Farrah? How are you going to do that, Farrah? Who's going to watch Sophia, Farrah? Blah, 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 blah. But instead, Deb goes into baby voice mode, accuses Farrah of saying that she doesn't love her anymore because she cannot live with her as a human being, which we know is not true. You can love somebody and not want to live with them. That can be said for any situation. And it's worth noting that Deb does not make any suggestions on how to improve anything. She simply goes, "Well, I don't know why you feel that way. I love you. I don't feel that way. Bye." And leaves Farrah to kind of sit in the guilt that she has created in her mind. A great question here might have been, "Farrah, what do you need help with that I'm not helping you with?" Maybe instead of doing the laundry, she could just sit and listen to Farrah without judging her for a half hour a day, you know, or something like that. Can we make that kind of compromise? Because I think that's what Farrah needs and wants. Living with that kind of constant fear of judgment and criticism is extremely exhausting. I guess Farrah gets a reality check in her very next scene. She decides to go look at a few apartments that needed roommates, and each one that she looks at, she only looked at two, is not quite up to 8-month-old baby standards. She's basically looking at frat houses, you know, like young people, at least 5 other roommates there already. She would be the 6th or the 5th in either situation that she looked at in this scenario. Obviously not a place that you want to have a baby. These people didn't even clean up to show the house, to show the room. It was very concerning. You can tell they maybe have never searched for a roommate before, but perhaps I've just never looked for roommates before, and maybe that's just how people do it. Farrah returns home after her unsuccessful search, and Deb asks where she had been. And Farrah tells her calmly, "Well, I was out looking at apartments." This causes Deb to ask, "Have you made a final decision? Are you moving out?" And Farrah tells her, "Not based on what I saw, not today. Everything I've seen is not as good as I have it here, and I just want to thank you for providing that for me." No, seriously, that's a conversation they have. Listen.
"It's, you know, still hard for me to live here because I did not picture myself living here with you. Like, originally I would have been moved with my own apartment, my own space, and, you know, getting college done. So, you know, I'm still learning the best things for me and Sophia. And I appreciate your guys' advice that you give me and your support. I just want to say I'm really thankful for all that."
"Well, thank you, baby. That means a lot to me." "Hi, baby goo."
"And so I just want to say I love you, and I just don't want you to question that just because I wanted to go look at apartments or if I want more of my own space. And you should just trust, you know, me growing up."
"Well, Farrah, I think you've been a good mom, and I know Sophia loves you very, very much. And I don't ever try to get in the way of that."
"Well, I'm glad.
I love you.
I love you."
"Big hug. Thank you. I love you very much."
"I love you too. Sophia loves you more."
Wow, what a 180 from their last conversation about this apartment deal. I love hearing Farah be grateful. I love being grateful. And I really enjoy Farah saying, look, I was out there today. Obviously, nothing was quite up to par, and you guys give me what I need. Thank you. I also want to take this conversation as proof that Farah can have rational conversations about her feelings. I really believe it's only when she feels threatened or otherwise criticized that she becomes hypersensitive to it and reacts so strongly to it. Like I said, previous conversation, she was already ready for a fight. She was expecting the criticism route. Deb knew she didn't even need to do that, and that apartment hunting would do it for itself. Now, I'm not sure if that's true, but it is kind of funny how that worked out, isn't it? I love these moments where they get along, and I'm happy to see this kind of wrap up in this way. This is probably her last scene. We're ending the episode very soon here. Kind of a long Farah session today, you guys. And finally, we meet back up with Caitlin. Caitlin and Tyler are headed to the library. Caitlin's voiceover says that since everything with Carly's adoption, they are really focusing on their futures and how they can better themselves since they're taking this opportunity to have that future. Caitlin says she's thinking about going to college, as we kind of heard, I think, in the last episode, while Tyler is actually looking into the Air Force. We meet up with Tyler in the library, Caitlin heading over to him, and he's looking at a book about the Air Force and the history of it. He says that, yeah, sounds like a good idea. They have really good benefits. And isn't that how they draw everybody in for the benefits? Like Javi too, and Kale for that matter. But that's next season on About This Time of Day. Caitlin asks Tyler if he's thought about talking to a recruiter, and he says, yeah, he actually has, and he wants to do that soon. And it starts to look like a solid idea to him. This is pretty exciting. We're getting to see these guys actually plan their futures and actually take steps towards achieving those. And I'm sure this could only mean that they're going to be successful in all of these endeavors throughout Teen Mom history, right? The scene pretty much ends there because all that they do for the rest of the scene is, no offense, but sit around and talk about how much they miss Carly again. They're literally repeating what they said a couple episodes ago, just about how, oh, I wish she were here right now. Well, yeah, and I get it. I'm being harsh, I know. But for TV purposes, how much longer can we as an audience, like, watch you miss something? God, I sound terrible, but I'm bored of it. I feel bad, but I'm bored of it. I would rather have more episodes like Caitlin working through that pain than them commiserating about it. That's why it bothers me, because I feel like they're not working towards getting themselves better. We're talking about their futures here, yes. Caitlin, college, Tyler, Air Force. But that's very hypothetical and in the future. One thing they could both be doing right now, provided they have the proper insurance, would be going to therapy, continuing therapy. Caitlin should be in active therapy, not just going to retreats. Tyler should be joining her or going on his own. Because if you're talking about it this much and you're so far out from the adoption, I really feel like still we need to be going deeper. Caitlin's voiceover ends that scene by saying she's glad that Tyler is thinking about his future, but joining the Air Force means they'll have to be apart for a long time. Ooh, yeah. That actually didn't occur to me when I was bitching about how repetitive their scenes are. That is going to be quite a distance from Caitlin, who is pretty dependent on Tyler. So this is probably a difficult concept for her to grasp at this time. That anxiety only intensifies in Caitlin's next scene, where Tyler has gone ahead and taken the steps to meet up with an army recruiter. Terrifying to a hippie like me, but if that's your choice, that's your choice. Tyler, Caitlin, and Tyler's mom, Kim, all go into the recruiter's office and sit down with a very professional-looking army gentleman who pretty much lays out the first 8 weeks after high school graduation for Tyler. Basic training, graduation, and then assignment from there. Tyler asks about Caitlin, saying that they've been together for a long time, and he kind of dances around asking, like, well, how often can she come see me? But the recruiter kind of understands what he's getting at and says, in order for her to live on base with you as a civilian, you two would need to be married. The scene pretty much closes out there, and Caitlin is looking very sad at that news that in order for them to live together on base after graduation, which for them is less than a year away at this point, they need to be married, and I don't think that Caitlin sees them getting married quite that soon. Caitlin's next scene is short but sweet, kind of reaffirming those sentiments that we left her last scene off on. She's getting a little worried that Tyler might actually go into the Air Force. We see Caitlin and Tyler sitting down at a diner, just having lunch, and Caitlin says, you know, I would really miss you if you went away. I still have those selfish moments where I think to myself, no, I don't want you to go. And Tyler agrees that he would miss her too, and that it would be hard to be away from her. Caitlin tells Tyler that if he did have to go away on leave and Caitlin couldn't live with him because they are not married, she would just try to go to school during that time and get her own education while Tyler's building himself up. And Tyler asks, would you wait for me? And Caitlin, without even missing a beat, says, of course I would. Tyler tells her, well, what if some guy bumps into you and you drop your books and you look at him and suddenly it's like this whole feeling rushes over you and you just can't control yourself? And Caitlin says, what, you mean like how I feel for you? So that's cute. That's nice that she's always kind of bringing it back to Tyler and reassuring him that, no, there's no other guy out there for me. Me, an inquisitive viewer, and someone who's seen this show many times, now wants to know, is Tyler projecting his fears onto Caitlin? What if Tyler meets somebody while he's out on leave in a city or in basic training maybe? Hey, no judgment, Tyler, I'm bi too. But what if he runs into somebody like that in all that time? Something tells me Tyler isn't really wanting to wait, or at least isn't as anxious to wait as Caitlin seems to be, but that's just what I'm picking up from it. You watch it, you let me know. So it's not really looking like there's a whole ton of Caitlin content in this episode, but I'll tell you what, the scenes that she is in are pretty important. Caitlin's next scene starts off with her and one of her friends going off to get their nails done because Caitlin's been a little stressed with Tyler really considering this Air Force thing. I guess it's the Air Force now, not the Army. I don't remember. You guys. And she needs somebody to hang out with, chill with, and talk to. She heads off to the salon with her buddy, Alexa, and they just talk very briefly about Tyler's considering the Army, Air Force, US, whatever. And then the scene transitions to Kim and Tyler back at Kim's house. They're sorting through laundry, and Kim asks Tyler, well, when are you going to your dad's house this weekend? And Tyler gives quite the unexpected response.
So what's going on today? Like, when are you going to your dad's?
Well, first, I want to do something.
Do something? What do you mean, do something?
I want to go get a ring.
A ring?
A ring.
What do you mean a ring?
Like a ring. Like a engagement ring?
Engagement ring.
Yes.
Engagement ring. That's right, Kim. I was just as shocked as you. I completely forgot that happened this episode. Here I am saying I don't think Tyler's ready to commit, and whoops, I'm gonna go get an engagement ring, Mom. Well, I like to think that my analysis is on point most of the time.
I just didn't think you guys were like, I mean, God, you're 17 years old.
I know, that's why
just
I'm not
gonna... Just give a baby up for adoption.
Placed.
I mean...
I know, that's why I'm not gonna ask her to marry me now. I just wanna show her that I'm like, I'm serious. So I'm just gonna give her the ring. I'm just gonna put it right on the table. I'm just gonna say, listen, this is where I wanna be. Like, this is, I just wanna let you know that I'm serious, I'm in love with you, and I really think that you're the person that I wanna be with for the rest of my life. Not now, I don't wanna make this commitment right now because there's too many things going on in my life and there's too many things going on in your life. And I just think we're too young to do that, but I want to let you know that this is how serious I am about you.
Okay, so it is an engagement ring, and it's not an engagement ring. Is he backtracking here because his mom is, like, taking it a little maybe more hard than Tyler expected her to? now I have no confidence in my assertions. Just this whole thing with the engagement ring has thrown me for a loop, but I'm still willing to bet that his reaction here is suddenly, well, not now, and it's going to be later, and we're too young for that right now. Yeah, mm-hmm. When just before this, we were talking about how the only way Caitlin can live with him on base is if he and she were married. I'm sure that has nothing to do with Tyler's sudden interest in telling Caitlin that someday he wants to marry her in the future, maybe.
I never thought I'd find someone that I really, really, really love that much at such a young age.
God, I'm kind of jealous.
You're jealous?
I didn't even know that at 17. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I didn't either until this whole thing with Carly. I didn't, like, I mean, I, not that I didn't love her, but I, like, knew, like, you know, oh, you know, I don't know. It was weird. And then after this, you know, going through this whole thing, she's just like, oh, my God, this woman is amazing. I want to solidify that, you know, she's the one for me. So.
But you really think she's the one?
Yes, I do. I know she is. Like, I just feel like that, I can't explain it. Like, I feel that complete. Like, I feel like that.
Ooh.
You know, this girl is like, she's it.
So, this one's a little difficult for me to analyze because I've had very few conversations like this with my own parents. We don't talk about feelings here. Notice how I drop my voice. But Tyler is telling his mother, this is the woman I'm going to marry someday in the future, maybe. And we... really actively see Kim trying to be like, are you sure? Is that your final answer? It's just, she must really not like Caitlin. And maybe it's the close quarters, the two of them living together, Caitlin and Kim under one roof, along with Tyler, of course, but maybe that's turned Kim off. I feel like that's a bold statement to make to your son about the mother of your grandchild. Don't you think? Are you sure she's the one, Tyler? Dude, even if they end up splitting up and not getting married or getting divorced, God forbid, let Tyler have this one. I understand that, yes, they've been through a very traumatic experience together and that can make bonds more strong or at least seem more strong. And Tyler feels a true connection with Caitlin right now because those emotions are so heightened. And I'm not saying it's not a true connection. I'm certainly not hoping Tyler is not sure about his decision here, as Kim is, but I think because of what they've gone through and because Tyler knows the experience of being a parent, he should have the emotional autonomy to tell Kim, this is how I feel, and this is what I'm going to do about it, maybe someday in the future. Regardless of how Kim feels about Tyler's decision, she still accompanies him on a trip to the jewelry store. We see a very short clip of Kim and Tyler at some fancy jewelry store looking at engagement rings that I couldn't even afford. I mean, they're not amazing, but they're nice, I think. And he's sitting there, he's got four rings, one on each finger, and he's just looking at each of them. He cannot decide which one Kate would like more, and I'm over here like, very angry that I am 30 and single. But hey, if I wasn't, I wouldn't have enough time to do this podcast. Well, my friends, thank you so much for joining me once more on this session of About This Time of Day. As always, I had a great time chatting about Teen Mom with you. And if you couldn't tell, I'm scrapping recapping the montage. It's really just a waste of time. You just heard me talk about Teen Mom for a fucking hour. You really need me to recap the montage for you? Anyway, thank you so much for joining me on this session. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to join us for our next session and actually our final recap of this first season of About This Time of Day, where we're going to talk about episode 8 of Teen Mom OG, Happy Birthday. That is the last episode of the first season, you guys. Oh my fucking God. I am so excited. I am so excited. Of course, I'm not counting the reunion as part of the season. I really usually skip those, and I probably will for this podcast as well. Until then, you can catch us on Instagram and Twitter at ATTODpodcast on Instagram and Twitter. That is the acronym for the show about this time of day. Or you can go old school and email attodpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can send your Christina facts if you have any. Of course, only positive Christina facts will be read. As we round out the session today, I want to leave all my listeners with some of my own wise words of inspiration. Manifest your goals. Fuck the haters standing in your way. Make your dreams a reality. And if you ever doubt yourself, or if someone makes you question your own ability, don't you fucking forget.
You're strong-minded. He's just a
strung out on weed. Don't leave.